listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that is dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this live broadcast, we invite you to call us with your questions. Our toll-free number is 800-630-7858. That's 800-630-7858. And we also have a live chat going here at emotionalpro.com on our radio page, which you can join and ask questions or make comments or interact with your fellow listeners. Fundamentally, according to today's guest, authenticity is about being you fully. It's about being yourself, understanding, owning, acknowledging, appreciating, and expressing all of who you are, both the light and the dark. It involves being totally honest with ourselves, with others, and also being vulnerable, aware, open, curious, and truthful above all else. And it's one of the most challenging yet important aspects of our growth as human beings. Authenticity is our subject for today. Our guest is Mike Robbins, author of a new book, Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Taken. Mike Robbins is a former pro baseball player with the Kansas City Royals organization, and you can find him at mike-robbins.com. He delivers motivational keynote addresses, personal development workshops, and coaching programs for individuals, groups, and organizations working to empower people to be successful and authentic, to create meaningful relationships, and to appreciate themselves and those around him. He's the author of the best-selling book, Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation, and he's a contributing author to Chicken Soup for the Single Parent Soul. Mike and his work have been featured on ABC News and the Oprah and Friends Radio Network, as well as in Forbes, Ladies Home Journal, The Washington Post, and many others. And with the release of his new book, I've seen Mike several times on television or gotten his email, and you may have also. Mike Robbins, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thanks for having me on.
You know, it strikes me that we all start out being our real authentic self, but almost all of us lose that authenticity as we grow up. So I'd like to start by having you tell us some of the things that happen during growing up that lead us to forget or to stop being who we were when we were born.
Well, you know, we could probably spend at least a whole day, if not a week, talking about that. But, you know, I spend the first third of the book in Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Already Taken, talking about both the cultural and personal aspects that make it difficult for us to be authentic. And, you know, I'm intimately aware of this these days, Ellen, because, you know, we have a 3-year-old Samantha and an 8-month-old Anna Rose, so I'm seeing it firsthand from the other side now as a new parent, watching, you know, myself and my wife do the best we can to raise our girls, but it literally gets trained out of us right away. I'll give you an example that happened just about a week ago here at our house. Samantha had a friend over, Isabel, and Isabel had brought a gift for Samantha to give to her. Now, I wasn't in the room, I was in the other room, but I overheard my wife talking to the girls, and her friend Isabel handed her the gift and said, "Here, Samantha, this is for you." And Samantha said, "Oh, I don't want that, I don't like that." And she kind of, you know, wasn't even very nice about it and just kind of went along her way. And my wife says to her, as I overhear this, "Samantha, sweetie, when someone gives you a present, it's important to say thank you and to accept it, even if you don't like it. That's the nice thing to do." And, you know, I didn't say anything, but I thought about it, and later Michelle and I were talking, and I said, "You know, babe, I totally agree with you, and that's an important lesson for us to teach Samantha, but, you know, you think about it, we're basically teaching her to lie." And, you know, those are the kind of things that we learn, and that's a very simple kind of mundane example, but we learn all kinds of stuff right out of the chute about how to be in life, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and some of that stuff just isn't true. Not for us, it's not authentic to who we are, but we start getting, you know, inundated with information and influence all around us that ultimately leads us to be where we are in life, which is pretty much not authentic most of the time, if we're honest about it.
Uh-huh. One comment we've already got on our chat is that you're thanking the giver for giving and for caring and extending themselves, not necessarily for the gift, and that might be a good differentiation.
Absolutely. Look, and you know, look, I mean, I'm a big believer. My first book's called Focus on the Good Stuff. I talk a lot about appreciation and acknowledgement and that it's important. Someone gives you a compliment, even if you don't agree with it, to say thank you. There's a lot of paradox involved in authenticity. And I say this with some empathy and compassion for myself and for most of us as human beings, and that is that I really think that we're full of it most of the time. And we've literally been lying to ourselves for most of our lives, and understanding who we really are and what's really true for us is first and foremost difficult because we're not even sure. And then when we're sure, it takes a lot of courage to live life and be bold and authentic in life and really speak our truth. It doesn't mean that we have to get in people's face and be, you know, provocative or confrontational or controversial, but sometimes the things that we want to say and do and what's true for us, other people aren't going to agree with or even like. And, you know, we've got to deal with, as we do on a daily basis in life, are we willing to really speak up and be real, or do we just want to, you know, get by and be nice and likable in life? And often those things are actually at odds with each other.
Well, I would just like to throw in here, as a person, I discovered how important truth was to me many years ago now, I think, fortunately.
Yes.
that for me, speaking my truth becomes easier over time. And I wonder if that's been so for you.
Well, look, you know, I am where I am in my life. I'm 35 years old. I've got 35 years of experience and inventory up to this point. And I would say in some ways, yes. And in some ways, no. I mean, I do hear, I was doing an event in San Francisco a couple weeks ago, and I had a very sweet woman who was in her early 80s who was sitting in the audience. And we were all talking as a group about how difficult it can be to be authentic and, you know, the challenges and the worries and the concerns. And she raised her hand and she says, "Honey, listen, when you're my age, you just don't care anymore." And, you know, we all kind of laughed. And, of course, I can't relate to that specific experience because I'm not yet at, you know, that point in my life. But I would say that in some ways, for me, and for a lot of people I talk to, yes, I have learned more and more and more about myself as I've grown, still at a relatively young age of 35, and I find that it's easier and easier for me to step into my own power and authenticity in some ways. But in other ways, and Eileen, you can relate to this, doing the work that you do, speaking and writing and teaching and being on the radio, is certain roles that we take on in life, parenthood, new jobs, new responsibilities, often can challenge us in some ways, and I find there are times I'll be less authentic, not intentionally, but all of a sudden it's like, boy, I'm supposed to know something now. I'm supposed to be an expert, you know? I mean, one of the things that I'm really clear about, and I actually don't think that many of us in this line of work tell the truth about this, is that I struggle with every single thing that I teach. The reason that I teach it, you know, the saying, we teach best what we most need to learn, is really true. Now, it doesn't mean I have no idea what I'm doing and I never practice what I preach, but what it does mean is that a lot of the things that come out of my mouth, I may understand them and know them, and some of them are really difficult for me to practice in life. That doesn't take away from the value of them. But I think what happens is we have a tendency, especially as we get older, and I find this in a lot of the work I do in the corporate world. People have worked somewhere for 15, 20 years. They have a certain amount of responsibility. They don't feel like they're able to admit they don't know things. Maybe when they were right out of school and they first started their job and they were green, it was okay to go, "I don't understand that." So I actually think in some ways we can become more authentic, but in some other ways, if we're really honest about it and we're not willing to be vigilantly truthful and vulnerable and transparent, we can become less authentic because we don't give ourselves permission to be scared or make mistakes because we think we should already know something.
Mm-hmm. We have that's really great. We have on the chat now Lady Diane, that's the way she identifies herself, saying that I speak my truths at different levels of volume and demonstration, like social convention can still be observed and you can be truthful to yourself. So what about that? I mean, I'm hearing this as there are different times and places to be fully truthful, and that maybe sometimes, as she's suggesting here, you can ask questions rather than offer your truth, your information.
Well, absolutely. Look, this is a personal journey for everybody. I mean, on the one hand, my intention with writing this book and having this conversation here with you and talking about it and doing the workshops that I do and coaching people is really to challenge all of us to step outside of our comfort zone. Now, again, this is not about walking around in life and being in people's face and espousing our opinions. Look, a lot of times our opinions are pretty irrelevant, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but just because we have an opinion about something doesn't necessarily mean we got to sort of dump it all over everybody. Now, the difference between an opinion and someone's truth, if you will, is it sounds often and can feel very similar, but I look at it more as, you know, and you talk a lot about emotions, it's really the expression of the real emotion of something, how we feel, what's going on. Now, if we choose to share that or not in any given situation, it's up to us, but we got to remember, there are consequences either way. People say to me all the time, well, I can't just be authentic and say what I feel all the time because it would upset people, it would offend people, it's not appropriate, and there's consequences. I say, absolutely, you're right, there are consequences to authenticity. Sometimes our truth can upset someone else. Sometimes our truth can be actually really damaging to someone else. But at the same time, there's huge consequences when we don't tell the truth. And I think very few of us in life run into problems by being too honest, too authentic. We run into problems by not being and not sharing. Almost every conflict, every relationship breakup, even every situation at work, again, I see this in corporations that I work with all the time, it comes from someone or a group of people or both people in a relationship not telling the truth. And if we can do it proactively up front when something shows up and be real about it, oftentimes the pain later on down the road that we run into doesn't end up happening because we dealt with it initially. So the question then becomes, what do we say? When do we say it? How do we say it? All that kind of stuff. Look, again, that's a personal journey. There's a lot of tips and techniques that I share in Be Yourself, Everyone Else Has Already Taken about stuff that we can practice. But fundamentally, we've got to find our own way and our own voice and our own process, if you will, in it, something that's actually going to serve us. But I would challenge everybody to look at whatever rules and definitions and ideas and assumptions we have about when it's, quote, appropriate to speak up and speak our truth. I challenge everyone to really take a look at those and look deeper as to what that's about. Because in a lot of cases, I know this is true for me, it's really about fear. We're scared to say what we really feel and think because we're scared of whatever the impact might be. And if we can take a look at that, there may be some opportunity for some freedom and liberation for us if we're willing to step through that.
So all of this sort of brings me to the question of how do we really tell when we're being fully authentic? How do you know when you're being authentic?
Well, it's, you know, it's a great question. I mean, I think it's a bit of a judgment call. I mean, we can kind of, I think we can feel it within us to some degree, but it's not always, you know, it can be tough. One of the things that I try to do is, you know, empower or entrust, if you will, the people around me. My wife is a great feedback mechanism for me because she can tell sometimes for me if I'm off or if I'm not when even I can't. But I think for the most part, if we're really present and we're really honest and we pay attention, we can tell. And if we really kind of take a moment, take a breath, and really look inside, am I sharing everything that's there? And as long as we're at choice, that's really the point, is to be at choice about it, not be sort of victimized by it. And we can catch ourselves in the moment. I'll give you an example of something that happens kind of funny related to this book. So I was sitting, in the meeting, pitching the idea of this new book to my publisher. Now, this is Josie Bassett, my publisher. They published my first book, Focus on the Good Stuff. I know them. I like them. They know me. The meeting, it wasn't, you know, this really tense situation because they were interested to begin with. I'm sitting in the meeting, and my editor's in there and a couple other people who work for Josie Bassett who I know and have worked with. But the president of Josie Bassett got invited to the meeting, and I found out that she was going to come to the meeting right before. And I was all excited, but a little bit nervous because I hadn't met her and was, you know, wanting to impress her. And after a couple minutes as we're in the meeting and, you know, I'm going into my pitch about the book and all the ideas I have about the book and how to market and all that stuff, it was going fine. I felt good about it. They were engaged. There was nothing wrong, but I could feel inside my heart was beating really fast and I could tell, gosh, you know, this isn't going exactly how I want to. I'm feeling like I'm trying too hard. That was what my experience was. So I stopped and I looked at Deborah, the president, and I said, listen, Deborah, I'm so excited that you're here. Like, I'm honored, and I'm glad to meet you, but I got to be honest. I'm a little nervous, and I'm trying really hard to impress you. Can I just stop doing that and be myself? And, you know, she laughed, and I laughed, and everybody laughed, and it was like, and then here's what I said. I said, listen, here's what I want to write this book. And I hadn't planned on saying this. I said, because authenticity is something that both scares me and excites me. I think it's really important. I think we all want it. And I'm not sure that we know how to access it consciously. And that's really what I want to inquire into, if you will, and find out and share whatever I find with people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the meeting went on not that much longer, and we got done. And as I left, I remember feeling a little bit insecure, like, oh, no, I don't know if that was a good idea. You know, again, it wasn't what I'd planned. And a few hours later, I got a call from my editor, and he said, hey, I loved the meeting. Deborah was so impressed with you. And I said, really? What was she impressed by? And he said, she was impressed with how authentic you were. And, you know, I just use it as an example. We can catch ourselves, and this is actually an important practice and technique and idea that I share throughout the book, is that the way that we can start to be more authentic and go deeper with our authenticity and our realness in life is to notice when we're not being authentic and catch ourselves in the moment. Even if it seems awkward, even if it seems inappropriate, in the middle of a meeting or a presentation, in the middle of a date, in the middle of a conversation, you know, there's stuff we say all the time in the middle of conversation. It's like, you know what? That's not true. It's not like we lie and say, you know, I own 5 mansions all over the world. But we say stuff that's like not really true, and we notice it and go, oh, and then it would like feel weird to say, oh, that was a lie. Let me say that differently. But we could actually do that, and people would appreciate it because it's honest.
Absolutely. I really like in that meeting with Deborah how you were talking about choice, how you asked her permission to make a choice, but in doing so, you actually were making the choice yourself. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, and you know, so that's really the whole first part of the book, again, I go through why it can be difficult to be authentic, and the more we can identify it, you know, what's the, again, not like blame, but notice our cultural upbringing, our familial upbringing. What were we taught about it in school, at church, in synagogue, you know, just whatever. We've all been given messages from the time we were really little. And then personally, what are some of the ideas that we have personally that stop us? One of the big ones that people say to me all the time, and I can relate to this one, is I don't want to hurt someone's feelings. So we don't say what's really true and honest with other people because, oh, if I said that, it would hurt their feelings. Now, I absolutely respect and understand this, and I'm not advocating that we walk around in life being, you know, dismissive of other people's feelings or just, you know, again, dumping our opinions and stuff all over people, but I actually don't think that most of us care as much about hurting other people's feelings as we care about what people think about us. So when we're concerned that someone else's feelings might get hurt, and we might genuinely be concerned about their feelings, we're mostly concerned, I know that this is true for me, that they're not going to like me, or they're going to think something bad about me, or they're going to tell someone, boy, you know what, a jerk, he said this to me, can you believe it? And so I think if we can get more in touch with that, and even tell the truth about it, you know, one technique when going into a situation, having a conversation that may get contentious or a conflict, or we have some, quote, critical feedback for someone else, is we can tell the truth and say, listen, I'm actually scared to have this conversation with you. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I don't know how to say this without sounding judgmental or whatever. I mean, not to give 9,000 qualifiers for it, but just be honest about it. Like, I really feel this deeply and strongly, and I want to say it in a way that's caring and kind and loving, and here's what's true for me. And if we keep speaking from our experience, here's how I feel. Here's what's going on for me. Here's what happened and how it impacted me, as opposed to judging people by saying, you know, the moment we start a sentence with you, when Michelle says to me, you always leave the lights on, you know, I will immediately get defensive, even though I have a tendency to leave the lights on. I'll say, no, I don't always do it. Remember? 2 nights ago, I turned them all off. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but if we let people know what they do or what they've done or what they've said and how it's impacted us, when you said that to me, I really felt hurt, I felt sad, I felt scared, whatever, honest, vulnerable, genuine. That's the way we can actually have conversations, even conflict conversations, that really make a difference.
I'm aware that you're using the principle of that the only time we have power is in the present. And just briefly, mm-hmm. Mike, I'll share with you a technique I discovered many years ago. Someone said something horrible to me that was painful, horrible in mm-hmm. that sense. And without too much thought, I turned to her and said, are you intending to hurt my feelings? Mm. And she said, no. And I said, well, then could you say what you're saying a different way, because I'm feeling hurt? And wow. It was so powerful that I've taught it to other people. I want to talk more about emotions. We're up to a break right now. We're talking with motivational speaker and best-selling author Mike Robbins. You can check him out at mike-robbins.com about his new book, Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Already Taken. We have more for you when we return. You're listening to Full Power Living at EmotionalPro.com, and I'm your host, Eileen Diplin.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Diplin. Have you noticed how much and how fast things are changing in this world? It's making stress our number one affliction. Staying emotionally balanced eliminates stress.
The only effective way to avoid stressing out with every change or disaster is to awaken your emotions. Emotions, you see, are special tools. They're available 24/7 to tell us what's best to do.
If you don't know the signal that anger, fear, depression, guilt, or jealousy are offering you, get the new CD album, Awaken Your Emotions, created especially for you in these stressful times by life coach Dakey Fox and emotional pro, longtime family therapist Eileen Diplin.
Easily handle everything life throws your way. When you gain mastery over these tools called emotions, you dramatically reduce stress, maintain personal balance, and permanently improve your life's overall quality.
Return to the inner peace of calmer times now. Get your copy of Awaken Your Emotions at the store at www.emotionalpro.com today.
That's www.emotionalpro.com.
On Full Power Living, talking today with former professional baseball player, Stanford graduate, coach, motivational speaker, and trainer Mike Robbins. His latest book is entitled Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Already Taken, all about returning to the state of being your authentic self. Mike, before we get back into questions, how can people get your books? Are they at all major booksellers?
The best place to get it, I think, I mean, if you're someone who likes to get books online, is at beyourselfbook.com, because not only can you get the book for a discount there, but you also get all kinds of free bonuses from some people who partnered up with me on the launch, which was just about a month ago, like Jack Canfield and Wayne Dyer and Marcy Shimoff and lots of other wonderful people like that. So if you go to beyourselfbook.com, you can find out all about that.
Be Yourself Book, that's a single book, right?
Exactly. Beyourselfbook.com.
Good. All right. So we were talking about emotions, and one of the things that you say is without true emotions, we have no hope of getting to our authentic selves. Why?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you're obviously an expert on this, so you and I can have a pretty interesting conversation about it, I would bet. I believe that, you know, what's really true, what's, you know, at the essence of our true being are our emotions. And a lot of us, as you know, again, probably even better than I do, people are funny about emotions. And, you know, we have this, my belief about it is, we have this whole idea that there are good emotions and bad emotions. And, of course, certain emotions have certain impacts. And I'd much rather feel happy and grateful and excited and passionate and joyous and in love than, you know, sad and angry and frustrated and scared and shameful, all that stuff. The thing about it is, though, emotions have so much power, and I like to look at it for myself personally and when I'm working with my clients as emotions can be really positive when we fully express them, and they become negative and really difficult and challenging for us when we don't. And there's a number of emotions, particularly anger, fear, sadness, hurt, shame, the quote bad ones, that many of us have a difficult time with. And what ends up happening is we suppress those emotions. We don't express them. We don't want to admit them. We try to avoid them. We do all kinds of things. You know, we overwork. We exercise. We eat too much. We, you know, take drugs and alcohol. We do lots and lots of stuff to avoid those emotions. And eventually, as you know, they come up anyway. So my belief is that, and one of the principles that I talk about in the book is to express ourselves fully. And really, if you think about it, it's like, look, I mean, how great does it feel when you get done crying? even if you're still sad about the thing you're sad about, there's that emotional release, and it's not only cathartic, but it's, I think, transformational. Or even when you get angry with someone and you sit down and have a conversation and really express that anger in a way that brings you closer and creates resolution. Or getting scared. You know, one of the principles in my book is to transform your fear. I think most of us are walking around, Eileen, in life scared, pretending that we're not. And we've just gotten used to living with a certain level of anxiety. So it's like, you know, the air conditioner being on in the room with us thinking it's quiet. We don't even notice it anymore until it goes off and we go, man, that was loud. So I think we can engage more fully in our emotions, we have so much more power.
Yeah. It's been my observation that people don't even realize that they don't have to be scared or they don't have to carry these emotions around.
Yeah. Well, we just think it's like, well, that's just how it is, you know, and as opposed to realizing that, well, if we can start to admit whatever it is we're feeling genuinely, not complain about it. I mean, that's the thing, is a lot of the whining and complaining and self-pity, and look, I know this from being an expert and master at it myself, is that's not the real emotion. When I start feeling sorry for myself or complaining, oh, it's so bad, it's so hard, usually there's something deeper going on. What am I scared of? What am I sad about? What am I angry or worried about? You know, I mean, going to that place, not as a way to wallow in it or get all stressed out and upset about it, but really like any emotion, look, all emotions, you know this, right? They ebb and they flow, right? When we actually experience them and express them, they dissipate. It's like getting excited. You know, when you get excited, when I get excited, I'm not like excited all day, woohoo, you know, like running around crazy. No, I get really excited and I express that excitement and that passion, and then it kind of starts to subside and it moves into something else, you know? But if we hold on to it, if we suppress it, it gets stuck. And there's all kinds of medical research out there now that's connecting a lot of physical illness and disease and issues that we have in our body that are connected to our emotions, that the inability to express our emotions. And this, again, with empathy and compassion, there are some emotions for us, based on a lot of factors, that are more difficult. And we need support from people like you who are experts at it, from people who we can really work with to help us access some of those emotions. You know, one of the big things that I'm really passionate about is with men specifically, as a man myself, challenging and empowering in a compassionate way all of us as men to express ourselves. You know, we've all been taught in different ways, even today, and we've gotten much better about it, I think, as we've moved forward in our culture. But for the most part, there's still this notion of, you know, boys don't cry and be tough and be strong and be a man and all that stuff. And, you know, I write about this, Eileen, in my book. One of my favorite days when I was a kid playing ball, I played baseball from the age of 7 all the way till 25. You know, you talked a little bit about my baseball career. You know, in college, played professionally, and, you know, I ended up getting injured in the minor leagues of Kansas City, so my career ended when I was in my, you know, early to mid-20s. But one of my favorite days of the season was the last day. And usually on the last day, you'd lose, which I never particularly liked losing. I was a pretty competitive kid, but the thing I liked about the last day of the season is that some of the guys, not everybody, and not all the time, but some would cry. You know, and usually it was very private. No one pointed fingers. We didn't get together and cry as a group. It'd be like sit in your locker, put your glove over your face and cry because there was this emotion of everything we put into the season and it was over. It was sad. And the reason that I really liked it is because when I was little league, all the way up through into pro ball when I was, you know, a young man, I would see the other guys cry and it always made me feel like I wasn't crazy because I cried all the time. You know, and it was just this nice, like, oh, thank God. And I think in our culture, male or female, you know, there's just different ways and situations at work and in places where we feel like it's not okay. People, look, when I do my workshops in the corporate world, inevitably when we do certain exercises, people end up crying. Now, I'm not trying to make them cry, but there's just stuff comes out when people get real. The emotions of life come out. And I think it's a beautiful thing and encourage it. But people are always, I have people in my workshops all the time apologizing for getting emotional. I'm so sorry, I'm blah, blah, you know, or like running out of the room or doing this whole thing like it's somehow inappropriate to be human and be emotional, which, you know, I understand, but it makes me nuts because, like, that's who we are and how we are as human beings.
You know, I thought of this knowing that we were having this program today. I caught a few minutes of American Idol last night.
Yes.
And the three contestants went back to their homes, and one of them, Danny, went home and his father cried.
Yeah.
And they took a picture of it. And his comment later, when he was on stage, was something like, my dad's not very good at holding on to his emotions.
Yeah.
And
you're right. Isn't that an interesting? I watched that and saw that same thing. Isn't that funny? You know, because there is this idea, and I don't know if you, the whole scene, right? It was actually Chris. It was, you know, he goes back, and
he's from
the South, right? No, so he's from the South, and again, not to make too many assumptions, but, you know, there's ideas about how men are, and particularly down the South. The thing I love is his dad, who was crying in the clip and then crying in the audience, very emotional. I actually started to cry when I watched that, when they were hugging each other. So did my wife. And if anybody didn't see it, you know, they were standing out in the driveway, and all the cameras were there, and the people were crowded around. He was, and you could hear on the microphone, I'm so proud of you. But right before that, you know, he kissed his mom, and his dad even said to him, I'm not going to kiss you, man, and everybody laughed. But, you know, those kind of things, there's a lot of social norms about it. And, you know, Eileen, one of the things, like my father, who passed away 7 years ago, was a very complicated man, very challenged in a lot of ways. He had bipolar disorder. My folks split up when I was 3. My relationship with him was very unconventional and at times very painful, although at times wonderfully beautiful. But one of the things that my dad taught me, and I never even realized it specifically until I got a little bit older and then even after he passed away, but my dad, just by the way he lived and operated and interacted with me, taught me that it was okay to be emotional, it was okay to be expressive. And I remember one of my buddies in college saying to me that he'd never hugged his father, which I couldn't believe. And he said he always liked watching me with my dad, because my dad not only hugged me, but even me as a young man, I'm in my, you know, late teens, early 20s, my dad would kiss me on the lips. Like, that's just how we always greeted each other. And I never even thought that that was weird, because that's what always happened. Even with all the challenge, and it wasn't like my dad and I had this idyllic, perfect, hey, son, let's go to the ball game kind of relationship, but that's just how my dad was with me. And I'm so grateful to this day that I had that example from my father, even with a lot of the things that I didn't learn from him. Learning that was one of the most important things. And I think for all of us in our culture, and specifically for men with other men, it's so important. And it's this thing, though, going back to authenticity, it's this fear, it's this awkwardness, it's this, you know, just thing that we do. And fill in the blank, whether we're male or female, whether we're young or old, wherever we are, we have lots of different rules about how to interact with people. And, you know, again, we want to be respectful and appropriate. You know, and another example that I'll give is I'm a hugger. I hug people, men, women, young, old, I hug people. But I'm also not wanting to be creepy and weird about it. So I ask people's permission before I hug them. I don't just go in and hug them, because, like, that's kind of strange. But I say, hey, listen, I'm a hugger. Can I give you a hug? Is that okay? And I'll even do it, you know, with big grown men, with professional athletes that I work with, you know, people in the corporate world where nobody hugs because you don't want to get in trouble for sexual harassment or whatever. And I just think as long as we're honest and open and real about it and our intentions are good, a lot of stuff can happen that we don't think can happen if we're willing to just be straight about it. And every now and again, people say, no thanks, I don't want your hug, and I just have to deal with not taking that personally, which sometimes I do anyway. But you know,
feeling
what I mean?
Deprived. Sometimes I feel deprived when that happens. Wait, what about my hug? I want it.
Exactly. You know, and the thing is, but what if, again, what if we could just be more open and honest? And here's another one. You know, one of the other principles in the book is be bold. And part of being bold is actually asking for what we want. Now, this is a big one, particularly for people in relationships and at work and just in life. You know, a lot of us don't tend to ask for the things that we want because we don't want to get hurt. We don't want to get deprived, as you said, or rejected. But, you know, my wife, Michelle, taught me a really important lesson about this early on in our relationship. She used to do this thing that I thought at first was kind of weird, but ultimately I found to be endearing and sort of cute, is she would, you know, we've been together for about 10 years now. When we first started dating, she would raise her hand and say, I would like to be acknowledged. And we'd be like sitting at dinner, or we'd be somewhere hanging out, and I'm like, what do you mean, acknowledged for what, you know? And then she would tell me, well, I just did this thing, or I just spent time doing this or making this for you, and I would like to be acknowledged for that, right?
Good for
and
her.
At first I was a little put off, like, I wonder, and then after a couple times I asked her, I was like, well, what's that about? And she said, well, listen, I've been in some relationships before, and I noticed that I would get annoyed with the guys I was dating because they wouldn't say nice things when I wanted them to, or comment on certain stuff, or... So instead of, you know, doing that with you, I just decided I'm going to ask for what I want. And if I want you to acknowledge me and you're not acknowledging me, I'll say something. And it was great, because in her doing that, she was honest about it, but she started to literally train me to pay attention to the things that were important to her. And it really served us. And she still, from time to time, will do it now, although I've learned a lot from the feedback to pay more attention to the things that are important to her. And, you know, because we're often scared to hear no, we don't go in to ask our boss for a promotion or ask for more responsibility. We don't ask our spouse to help us out or our friend if they would do something for us. And as long as we can be clean and clear about it and realize that a request, a real request, someone can say yes or no, and there's no consequence either way. But what often happens is we don't ask for what we want because we don't want to seem pushy or weird or get hurt or all that stuff. And then finally, when we do, our requests aren't really requests, they're demands. We might say it in a nice way, would you mind? But then as soon as someone says no to us, we're all upset. Oh, I never ask for anything, and then you tell me no, and I can't, you know, all that nonsense. When if we could just be more free with what we want, we wouldn't, you know, sort of harbor all this, you know, suppressed resentment underneath by not saying stuff. And, you know, one of my favorite sayings is the answer is always no if you don't ask.
Oh, I like that. You know, I used to teach continuing education courses for California probation officers, and one that I taught was on gender communication.
And oh, wow.
In the class, I talked about something that I had learned to do that I think helps communication between men and women. That is, if I were to go to my husband and I wanted to tell him something, I made a habit of saying, I want to tell you this, but I don't want you to give me any response. I just want you to listen when you do that.
That's good.
Or I would say, you know, I want to tell you this, and I'm open to all your feedback, or whatever.
Yes.
And I would ask him if he would go along with that before I did it. Now, some of the men in the class were upset about it because they said it felt demanding. And I pointed out to them, hey, many men say they don't know what a woman wants, so I take the responsibility of telling you what I want, and you always have the opportunity to say, no, I don't want to give that to you, and I give you that opportunity up front. So what's
Absolutely.
Not okay about it?
Well, and I think that's fantastic, you know, to do that with your husband. And, you know, again, look, some of this stuff, as you know, it can be a bit stereotypical. It doesn't always follow. Not all men are one way and all women are another way. But there are some similarities, as we've all noticed in life. And whether it's with our spouse, if we happen to be married or in a, you know, committed relationship with someone of the opposite sex, or just interacting with our friends, our coworkers, our family members of the opposite sex, I think there are some general rules and general ideas that can be very helpful. That's a great one, I think. And for men, the flip side of that is also if the person, the woman you're in relationship with, isn't doing that, you know, in the way that you were, you can also do it. We can do it ourselves. I can say to my wife or to any woman I'm interacting with as they start to talk to me, hey, hold on, time out. Before you get into the rest of it, can you just let me know, would you like my advice or feedback, or you just want me to listen, right? Because that is one big difference between men and women in terms of how we communicate. And if we can just be more honest about it, you know, another thing related to that, I mean, we're talking about relationships and male-female dynamic, and this is another thing that Michelle has been really wonderful in doing and teaching me about is, you know, letting, she has what she calls a win file, W-I-N, win, like ways that I can win, so to speak. You know, it's kind of like a honey-do list, but a little bit different in that she'll put things in this folder, little things that I could do or something that I might pick up for her. And it's not a demand. It's not like I need it tomorrow. And, you know, if there's stuff she needs me to do, she'll ask me directly. But she'll just put things in there. And then the idea is, because I also like, as a man in particular, to be able to surprise her. But I want to surprise her with stuff that I know she wants. So if there's something in there that I know that she wants, then I can figure out a time that I'll get it or do it for her. And then it'll still be kind of a surprise, but she asked for it as well. So it's sort of a hybrid of the two. But the nice thing is she can put it in the folder. Or I've heard people create a list called things you can do to support me list and literally put it somewhere in a place that both people have access to. And it's a way that instead of us getting resentful and frustrated or wanting things and not having a way to express those desires, we can put it somewhere that's not super demanding, but is also pretty explicitly clear. Because this whole notion that we can read each other's minds is just nutty. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot, and this is another stereotype, but I think a lot of women get really frustrated with men, and some of the feedback as I work with women or couples, they'll say things like, well, if he really loved me, he would know, or if he would pay attention, or do you know? And one of the other things that Michelle will constantly say that she has to remember is that I'm not her girlfriend. Like, I'm not going to think like a woman. I'm not going to react like a woman. And if she expects me to be her girlfriend, then we start having problems in our marriage because that's not how it works. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Oh, that's really, really great. Well, you've got us up to our second break. We're talking with best-selling author Mike Robbins, author of Be Yourself, Everyone Else Is Already Taken, about authenticity. And call us at 800-630-7858 to ask your question directly or ask on the chat. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You and everyone you know have been born to learn. All humans are on Earth to attend school. People know this intuitively, but they don't really live by it. And now you can. I'm Eileen Dillon. Born to Learn is the title of my latest book, available at emotionalpro.com. The result of 30 years of investigation, which gives you the big picture and the instruction book. Born to Learn gives you information you need to turn your problems into puzzles and then solve them. Life is kinder when we complete our homework assignments. Start today. Order Born to Learn at emotionalpro.com and get a leg up on your life. On Full Power Living, go to iTunes and subscribe to receive Full Power Living shows. Check it out. Next week, May 21st, Life Coach Dakey Fox and I delve deeper into the issue of vulnerability, which we've been exploring this month as we discuss vulnerability and emotions. On May 28th, we have Stuart Wild, who will be talking about his 20th book with us, Grace, Gaia, and the End of Days. And on June 4th, we have Dr. Janine Talty, who is the first person known as an indigo child who has written a book about her experience called Indigo Awakening. And I think that's going to be very, very interesting. So please join us in the coming weeks. You won't want to miss our great shows. And also to remind you that Dakey Fox and I are starting two new shows in the Women's Information Network, found at thewin.org. It's a new internet radio network offered for women over 40. We're going to be offering two shows, Building Conscious Families and Taking Your Turn, in which we're supporting women's desire to take their full place in the world. And our broadcast begins in June, and we'll keep you informed. Today, we're finding out a lot about authenticity and authentic living as we talk with Mike Robbins, author of Be Yourself, Everyone Is Also Taken. Mike, your book title is an Oscar Wilde quote, and
yes.
I find people really respond to it. How did you choose it?
Well, when I was writing Focus on the Good Stuff, my first book, I just came across it. You know, I would get stuck sometimes writing, and I would Google things. I was always looking for quotes and inspiration, and I found the great quote from Oscar Wilde, and there's a section, just a very small subsection, in Focus on the Good Stuff where I used it as a subheading. And I was surprised that no one had actually used it as a book title because it's such a fabulous quote. It's not one of his more famous ones, but there's something about it that, you know, whenever I would share it and when I was speaking or leading a workshop there, I would get an audible response. People laughed, and their eyes, you know, there's something about it that when you say, be yourself, everyone else is already taken. There's like wisdom and humor and insight, and it sort of cuts to the chase, if you will, of something I think we all know. It resonates with people on so many levels. And while it's easy to say and it's funny to hear, it's not so easy to do. So that's really what started me kind of on the exploration, if you will, of writing this book, because authenticity has always been something that I've been drawn to in other people and in myself and just in life. And at the same time, I have found it and continue to find it a tricky, mysterious sort of dance, if you will, with lots of ins and outs and ups and downs, you know.
Well, good. I'm glad to know how you did that. I've been getting similar response when I either I'm walking around with your book because I was reading it. I took a trip and I was on the plane and people were really responded to it, you know, pointing, laughing. And so I was interested. It's a really great title.
Yeah, thank you.
A while ago, you mentioned fear. Mm-hmm. And you say that the third and probably most significant personal reason that being authentic is difficult is, in addition to the personas that we create and our for ourselves and our self-criticism, is fear.
Yes.
And I'd like to hear a little bit about how you approach fear and how people can work with it or transform it.
Well, I think the first, you know, we were talking a little bit about it earlier that I believe most of us, you know, are walking around in somewhat of a perpetual state of fear and anxiety. And again, I think, you know, you said it, I think we don't realize that we don't have to. And, you know, look, I'm not saying that fear is this wonderful, beautiful, great thing, like, hey, let's be scared all the time, woohoo, what a great way to live. But I think there's this notion that either what we have to do is sort of hide or avoid our fear to kind of make it in life, don't never let them see you sweat kind of thing that we've all sort of bought into, or when we start on our path of growth, of learning, of discovery, we start to learn, as it says in A Course in Miracles, right? We make choices and take actions either out of love or out of fear. And while I do think that's true, I think what happens is we start thinking that fear is this bad, evil thing. So sometimes what happens, whether we're talking psychologically or more spiritually or whatever, it's almost like we don't want to admit it because I'm supposed to be more evolved than that and not have fear anymore, which is crazy. You know, because we all do. So I think it's about telling the truth and having an honest conversation with ourselves and an honest engagement in fear and remembering that it's one of the most natural, normal human instincts and emotions. And in fact, it can be and is really positive in the sense that it saves our life. It keeps us out of danger and trouble. The problem is we give our life over to it. So the steps that I talk about in my book and when I'm doing workshops on this are pretty straightforward, but not the easiest things in the world to do. And the first thing is to admit it. Be able to admit that we're scared. Own it. Own it as ours. It's not anyone else's. It's not someone's fault. No one can make you scared. Certain situations might elicit fear in you, but the fear exists within each of us. So if we can admit it, own it, communicate it, like express it out loud in some way, ideally to another person that we feel safe with, that we can just let it out. If we aren't comfortable doing that, we can write it down. But to admit it, own it, express it, and in the process of expressing it, really feel it. Because as we were talking about earlier, I think that experiencing and really sort of having that visceral experience of an emotion and then letting it out helps us move through it. And then the next step and the most important one with all of that is to be able to take action in the face of our fear. You know, and the thing is, once we do that, we start to train ourselves over and over and over again, build that muscle of courage, if you will. You know, Eileen, look, you and I both get up in front of groups of people and speak. You know, you're on the radio. You've written lots of books. I mean, I love doing this. I've only been doing it for about 10 years myself. But there's an element of fear and nervousness that shows up for me almost every single time when I'm about to get up to speak. And for me, being able to be with that, to admit that, own it, communicate it, express it, and then get up and speak anyway is just part of the process. You know, and look, I get up on stage. I was just speaking last week in Los Angeles in front of a huge group of people at a big conference. Look, my knees were shaking when I first walked up on stage. The thing about it for me, and I don't say this to sound like I'm Mr. Tough, and I just don't care. Like, my body's reacting, and the adrenaline's flowing, and all that's happening. I just know and have done my own sort of mental and emotional work before I get up there that that's just what happens. And in fact, I can use that fear as a way to connect with who I really am, the vulnerability within me, the honesty, the truth in me, that yes, I'm up there and I want to do what I'm there to do. And of course, there's a part of me that's worried I'll screw it up and they won't like me and I'll sound like an idiot and all that normal stuff about being human. And if we can tap into our own fear in a positive way, we can actually use that energy as a way to engage with others. We can use that energy as a way to propel us. And I personally love it. It's fun for me. It's exciting. It's like a reminder that I'm alive and I'm human and I care. But I think, again, we literally fear fear so much. We're scared of it that we let it keep us in prison.
I certainly agree with you on that. I'm sitting here chuckling because you and I are both members of the National Speakers Association. And many years ago in Northern California, we had a little feature at our twice every other month meeting, and that yes. was that you could get up and give a little 10-minute speech to your colleagues yes. and get feedback. And yep. I had been on the board of directors, and I got up and gave a speech called What I Learned on My Honeymoon that helped me in the speaking business. And
right.
I had by that time a number of friends, and they all gave me a great applause as I got up on the stage. And I actually got nervous in the middle of the speech and later mm-hmm. realized it was because I didn't believe I was lovable and all those people were loving me. So my fear actually wow. was about being loved.
Yeah. Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing that really honestly and vulnerably, because I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening can relate to that, whether they've had the exact experience of standing up in front of a group like that or not. But that's the thing. See, I mean, right there, like, that's real. That's honest. I can relate to that. I'm sure everybody mm-hmm. can relate to that. And that's what bonds us as human beings. See, it's like we walk around in life, whether we're professional speakers or not, it doesn't even matter, whether we're just in our life, in our job, in our family, sort of acting like we have to have it all together instead of just being who we really are in that moment. You know, and in that moment, look, you probably didn't say that in the middle of that speech, and it may not even be appropriate, but what if you could say, wow, I'm feeling kind of nervous right now because you're all really loving me and I'm not so sure I'm lovable, right? You know, I mean, because, wow, it's like you talk about getting people's attention. They go, well, what'd she say? You know, but the thing yeah. is, the thing is, though, I think, again, this is not about, again, being shocking or provocative or overly dramatic or whatever. All things, by the way, I know that I can be at times. I think, though, it is about being real. And the thing about the truth, and I say it sort of in quotes, not the truth like, you know, you're right and I'm wrong or your opinion, but when people speak their truth, or it comes from a truthful, authentic place within them, you can feel it. I may not even agree with you. I may not even understand what the heck you're saying. I had a man the other day when I was sharing this as an example came up to me after and said he saw the Dalai Lama speak in the late 70s. And he said, Mike, I didn't know what he was saying. I don't understand the language, but I could feel it. There was a truth. There was something real coming that I'd never experienced, he said. And I've never seen the Dalai Lama, so I haven't had that experience directly with him. But it doesn't even have to be the language that we speak. We can feel it. And I think it's something that most of us really want. We're drawn to. We want it from our political leaders. And sadly, we don't feel like we get it hardly at all. We want it from the people we work with. We want it from the people in our family. We want it from ourselves. But it does take some courage. And it's a moment by moment, day by day, year by year. It's not one of these things like authenticity is not a destination. Like, I'm authentic now. No, you're only authentic or inauthentic in the moment. Are you being real and true right now? Am I being real and true with you right now or not? You know, and that's really how we get to practice and just deepen that. And the more we deepen it, the more freedom we have in life, the more peace we have in our lives, the more power we have, the more access we have to who we really are, all of things I think most of us want, but it's not one of these snap your fingers and just do it overnight. It's a sort of lifelong practice.
Well, related to that, I noted on your website that you participate in a program promoting world peace, and so I can't remember the name of the organization right now. What is it?
Yes. It's the Peace Alliance. I'm actually the Vice
Alliance.
President of the Board of the Peace Alliance, yeah.
Right. So what I'm wondering is, it sounds like you're saying that if more of us were our authentic selves, it would be easier for us to be peaceful with one another. Am I hearing that correctly?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that at some level, you know, I don't think there's too many people. We could, you know, have a whole other hour-long conversation about, you know, peace in the world and in the country, but I don't think there's too many people out there that really don't want peace, even the way we may disagree and argue about it here in this country and around the world. We have different ideas about how to get there and what's the right way and all of that, but at some level, when you think about a lot of political, you know, debates that happen on social issues, on issues of war and peace and things, I don't know that there's a real authentic conversation that's happening where we really share how we feel. We're too busy trying to win the argument and defend our position instead of really listen to each other and share how we really feel. And I think, you know, again, without getting too grandiose about it or also too simplistic about it, that peace in our world, in our country, in our community, starts with peace within ourselves. And how do we make peace within ourselves? It's not about, you know, meditating all day long or, you know, doing yoga. I mean, those things are wonderful, right? But it's really about coming to peace with the internal conflicts that we have. You know, loving and appreciating ourselves, even with our flaws and our faults and the things we're not so good at. It's just being in alignment, if you will, having what we say and what we do line up with who we are as much as possible. It's an ideal. You know, it's one of those things. It's like love. It's like truth. It's like health. It's like, you know, you aspire. We aspire to it. I don't know if we ever fully achieve it. I don't say that in a defeatist way, but just to be real about it. And I absolutely believe my passion in peace in the world is directly connected with my own desire and passion for peace within myself and for us to have peace in our relationships and in our lives.
That's nicely said. So one of the, I guess the last thing I'd like to talk about is you talk about celebrating who we are.
Yes.
You talk about writing a love letter to ourselves.
Yes.
Tell us
That's
a little
great,
bit
actually,
more.
Yeah, it's, well, celebrate who you are is the fifth and final principle of the book, and it's really the foundation, actually, of both my books. Focus on the Good Stuff really comes down to really appreciating ourselves and Be Yourself, Everyone Else Has Already Taken. This whole idea of authenticity and being who we are really has to do with celebrating and loving who we are. One of the main reasons, I think the biggest reason, I mean, that we're not authentic in life is because we think that who we are isn't good enough the way we are. We need to lose some weight. We need to make more money. We need to be smarter. We need to be some way that we're not, and then we'd be better and more lovable, more acceptable. Then I'd be authentic if who I am authentically is okay. So it comes down to, it's not about bragging or boasting. It's not about being perfect. It's not about any of that. It's really about loving and accepting and appreciating who we are. And this send a love letter to yourself. I'll just share this briefly as a technique because I love doing this in workshops. Very powerful. But and anybody listening can do this. Take out a piece of paper and write a love letter to yourself. Now, this may be vulnerable. This may take some work, some time, some emotional work, if you will. For others, it might be easier to do, but really have it be as genuine as possible, like you were writing to the person that you love the most in the world. What do you appreciate about yourself? What are you proud of? What are you grateful for about you? And write that down as honestly, as in as heartfelt a way as possible. And when you get done and you feel like you've really expressed it, not perfect, but done, right? Fold the letter up. Put it in an envelope and put your name and address on the front of the envelope and put a stamp on it. Then give it to someone you really trust and say to them, listen, this is a really sacred, important letter that I wrote to myself, and here's what I'm doing. I'm giving it to you. I'm entrusting it with you. And I want you to read it, but what I'd like for you to do is hang on to it. And at some point in the next year, whenever you feel moved to, drop it in the mail. Don't tell me. Just drop it in the mail. I'll get it. And they may put it in the mail the next day or the next week or a month later or at the end of the year. They may lose it and forget about it and 10 years later come across it in their office or something. But I promise the way the universe and spirit works, it will show up in your mailbox on the day you absolutely want it and need it, and you will be blown away by the fact that you wrote that letter to yourself, and it'll show up, and it'll be a great reminder of you to celebrate yourself.
Wow. That's really nice. That's a great way to end the show. I want to compliment you, too, on letting people know. I noted that you were endorsed by the Spiritual Cinema Circle, and you named a lot of people, including my friend Susan Page, who have been supportive of you. And so my fantasy is that in some ways, sharing Be Yourself, Everyone Else Is Already Taken with the world is a way of celebrating yourself. And so I want to both congratulate you on that and thank you for celebrating yourself so publicly.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, and it's really been an honor and a privilege to be on your show and have this conversation with you. So thank
Great.
You.
Thank you for being on Full Power Living today, Mike. My best to Michelle.
Thanks.
Be sure to join us next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, May 21st, for an in-depth discussion about vulnerability and emotions between me, Eileen Dillon, and life coach Dagi Fox. We look forward to having you with us again. Until next time, I'm your host, Eileen Dillon, thanking you for listening and reminding you to pay attention to what you want to become and not to what you want to overcome.
listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.